Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360. Well, we have a new mysterious dog respiratory disease that is all over the media and affecting the pet parents out there. And we're going to have a really good deep dive conversation with our wonderful friend and colleague, Dr. Celine St. Bernard, chatting with us. How are you, my friend?
I am wonderful. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm excited to learn. This is very, very popular right now. And to the listeners, I reached out to Dr. St. Bernard because we have at DVM 360, we have a very good relationship with the American College of Veterinary Preventative Medicine. And I said, I would love to have a great thought leader in that area of expertise to kind of share their perspective on what we're dealing with, both in the media as well as a veterinarian too. So I'm excited. Thank you again for joining us. And yeah, a little bit of information further about Dr. St. Bernard. She is a DACVPM, which focuses on zoonotic and infectious diseases, epidemiology, safety, and public health. She received her BS in zoology and DVM from The Ohio State University. We had to give a shout out because we have a lot of listeners from there.
And also, a big game coming up.
That's right. Spent a couple of years studying biomedical engineering and business at the master's level at Case Western Reserve University. She's got over 25 years of experience in companion animal veterinary medicine, practiced in multiple states, and Dr. St. Bernard designed, operated, and sold a companion animal veterinary practice. And during her career, she practiced both emergency critical care and general practice. And currently, she's the regional medical director for VCA Animal Hospitals in Southern California. And she has a passion for service and is a member and former chair of the Board of Health and Human Services for the city of Long Beach, California, and is a past president of the American Association of Industry Veterinarians. So thank you for all the great work that you've done. My goodness.
Well, thank you. It's been fun.
Yeah, you still continue to do it. I love our profession because we're always reinventing ourselves, finding new chapters to write in our career. And you certainly have quite a few chapters that are just so worth mentioning. So congratulations on all those wonderful accolades. Okay, so we got this canine respiratory virus. And before we get a little bit further, tell us what we currently know about the latest information on this respiratory virus. I don't even know if we should call it a virus. So let's start there, I guess.
What do we know? Right. That's a great place to start. I think the biggest challenge is that there's a ton of information in the media and we don't have a lot of information and to actually provide. So we are seeing an increase in respiratory cases, spotty all around the US in different locations. Some of those cases are cleanly getting diagnosed with assorted viruses and bacteria that we already know about and can test for. But we seem to have some cases in some locations that are progressing to more serious illness, potentially into a pneumonia. And we don't have diagnoses for all of them. Not everybody does diagnoses for respiratory illness in dogs. It's becoming more common. We've had outbreaks in the past several years. So people, I think, are more comfortable, you know, with our diagnostics now and we'll do more testing, but a lot of them potentially get treated, just get better, which is what's happening with most of them. And we don't have a firm diagnosis. So what we're trying to identify now is there something new out there that we need to know about that we either can diagnose and or need to figure out how to treat? I just don't think we have a clean answer if it's a virus or a bacteria or something else or a combination thereof. A lot of our respiratory disease is combination disease. You know, we see mycoplasma combined with Bordetella and things like that too. So we're trying to do a lot of testing. All the veterinary labs, universities, public health departments, on the veterinary side, of course, are all working on trying to come up with some answers, but we don't have one yet.
I know. A little piece of information from what we know from this population, from Dr. David Needle at the University of New Hampshire College of Life Sciences and Agriculture. He says that the pathogen is, quote, a funky bacterium, and it's smaller than normal bacterium in its size and then the size of its genome. And he does preface it that this is just in his population that he's seeing. So I don't know if it's representative of what we're seeing across the country, but I'm curious to get your take on that.
Yeah, it's interesting research. They've been so they had some cases last year. So this is data from the cases they saw last year that they started working on. I think they were clear that they're releasing the information a little earlier than they normally would have because we're seeing some cases in other places that seem to look clinically similar, and they wanted to make sure the information that they had was available. But you're correct that that is a their population in that location in the those one or two northeastern states, and we haven't either repeated or confirmed that anyplace else in the country at this stage that I'm aware of.
Okay. Yep. Understood. And let's talk a little bit about diagnosing. And, you know, I think in veterinarians, when we have these dogs that present to us with your typical cough and the hack, depending if there's discharge or whatnot, you know, we talk to the pet owners about possible Bordetella, influenza, mycoplasma. So, you know, how do we go about diagnosing things if we're maybe concerned that it might be this?
It's a good question. We have a couple of diagnostic opportunities or options. The best diagnostic we have for respiratory disease and the easiest one to do is called a PCR test. And most of your veterinary labs, Intech, IDEXX, et cetera, will offer that kind of a panel. And there's a list of known bacteria and viruses, like you mentioned, Bordetella and Mycoplasma, kind of on the more bacterial side, and including other things like Strep zooepidemicus, which we've also seen in a couple of these cases, as well as our viruses like flu, the canine flu viruses. And so that's the best diagnostic we have. It just takes a nasal swab, harken back to COVID testing. It's a very similar type process, and that will allow us to identify if there's specific pathogens that we're aware of that may be causing illness. Most of the cases and most of our canine respiratory disease, a lot of times they don't get a test done. If the case is relatively mild, if the dog has a cough or a sneeze or is or you know has some signs, but is otherwise feeling well, they're not lethargic, they're eating, they're drinking, they seem otherwise okay, generally we treat them symptomatically. So they may get some cough medicine. We isolate them so they don't spread it around, and we just kind of watch them. If a dog seems sicker, so they either their cough isn't getting better, or their eating is impacted, or they are lethargic, or we feel like they're actually getting sick versus just having the little bit of clinical signs, that's more likely when we're going to do a test. And the PCR is the first one we go to. If the pet is not responding once they're in the hospital, if we don't get anything positive on that test, like it all comes back negative, which can happen, especially if we catch them later in the disease, sometimes we may not get an answer from that. Then you're looking at doing something more aggressive, like a transtracheal wash or a bronchoalveolar lavage to try and get a culture sample so we can try and culture what's growing if something's growing. And obviously, that's going to specifically bacterial culture that we're looking at. In those cases, we don't get as many of those done,
Right. Yeah.
which is expensive.
I was just going to say, I mean, you know, it can be pricey to the pet parent and all those things. And it's not something that you jump to right away. But
Absolutely not.
again, if it warrants where they need to be hospitalized, intravenous fluids, they're febrile, all those kinds of things, it sounds like, yeah, that's where you would approach. Okay. So let's talk about as veterinarians, how we handle the media right now, because I was just talking to a veterinary hospital today, and they said that every single call has been about this, and it's actually interfering with some of the ones that are like really, really sick, you know, like hit by cars, traumas, like being put on hold. So what should we be telling pet owners since there really has been this cause for fear about this unknown disease that's out there?
Sure. I mean, I think that's always a challenge when we have things in the media. It's important that we share information. We have a capacity to do that nowadays that we didn't before. So that's a positive thing. We
Sure.
want to know if there's something we need to know about. The question is it as alarming as it sounds? And I would say, based on the number of cases that are being reported, the number of cases that we're seeing, that the alarm might be a bit more than the situation warrants at this time, based on what we know or what we're seeing in terms of number of cases. So we're recommending basic standard respiratory care, which is, of course, it's Thanksgiving, but we're generally recommending to try and keep your dogs out of co-mingling situation. So doggy daycare and boarding. I work with several boarding kennels, and obviously they're quite concerned at this point. But we do our best. There are things we can vaccinate for. We should vaccinate for the things that we can vaccinate for, because again, that will limit their risk of those and or of having multiple things at one time. So we should vaccinate. Keep an eye out on your pet. If they're having coughing, sneezing, or respiratory signs, or aren't feeling well, call your vet. In terms of prevention, those are the two things you can do. You vaccinate against what you can, and you keep them away from other dogs, you know, as much as possible.
I love that. It's something that I say to pet parents is let's control the controllable, like control what we can control with vaccinations of influenza and Bordetella. And it makes it easier on us as veterinarians that we can kind of check that off of our differential list, knowing like, okay, you know, vaccinate against that. So maybe it might be something of concern like this that we're talking about. But I do like that. And I think it's such a great reminder to our colleagues to chat about, you know, best practices of, you know, isolation and, you know, just general care of what we were doing when like the quarantine happened on the human side, right? I think it's a good reminder of maybe leave the dog in the car before you have the exam, you know, bring them in the back or definitely, something like that.
Definitely. Yeah. Right. And at the veterinary hospital, I think that's, so if your pet is sick, and for the veterinary hospitals or veterinarians, to have a protocol, they should have a protocol for contagious disease. We have one for parvo. We should have one for respiratory illness. So if even without a potential of something, you know, that we're not aware of or a disease we don't know. So if somebody calls and their pet is having respiratory signs, they should wait in the car if it's safe to do so, obviously with the person or, you know, depending on the weather outside, or they should have a separate place in the hospital they're coming into that can be then disinfected and not reused if we determine that that patient is infectious.
And what about the hospital team? Can we be a fomite for these kinds of conditions? I mean, how what type of protocol should we put into place if we're coming home to our own dogs after work?
Right. That's an excellent, it's a really excellent point. I think the answer is we don't know, but most likely yes, to some extent. And so respiratory disease can pass, obviously, between secretion, so nose to nose with the dog. So that's why the boarding is and playing is a risk. Certainly airborne is a possibility, whether it's air or droplets. And then definitely fomite. So our clothing, our shoes, our hands. We always recommend the most standard of precautions, which is just wash your hands a lot. So we should, and I would say this all the time in every hospital, every day, regardless of whether there's some kind of outbreak or not, we really need to wash our hands between every patient. In these cases, if we have something that we think is infectious, we should gown and wear gloves as well. That will just help protect our clothing. It's a really good idea as a veterinarian or a veterinary technician or anybody working in a veterinary hospital, because we all go visit the pets because they're cute, that we go home and remove our work clothes and shoes before we go in and visit with our own pets. I know a lot of people don't do that, but it's an excellent general standard precaution. And keep your pets vaccinated.
Right. Yeah. So important. But I can't stress that to you enough. You know how many times I just want to lay on the couch and just be with my dogs. You're working such a long day. You're exhausted, you know? And, but it's true, everyone, the listeners, you really have to, hopefully you have that protocol in place, whether, you know, in my garage, I would have a change of clothes all ready to go and then, you know, pamper up and clean up. But it's important, especially with what we have going on with this. This might be potentially a new emerging infectious disease that's out there, right?
Exactly. And unfortunately, as veterinarians and veterinary team members, we can be a location where these things can jump and spread. So we want to do our best for that not to be the case.
Yeah.
Be cautious.
Is there any resources that the American College of Veterinary Preventive Medicine has in general for protocols and, you know, what to deal with when there's like new and emerging diseases like this?
I don't know that we have specific like statements or things out, but there are lots of things out there you can refer to. So if you're looking for treatment and diagnostic recommendations, I recommend the ISCAID guidelines. So that's the International Society of Companion Animal Infectious Disease. I know we love long acronyms in veterinary medicine, but the ISCAID has really good respiratory guidelines, and you'll see actually even out in the media, a lot of people referring to those for veterinarians for care and treatment. So that's where your best guidelines on treatment and care are. It's an open source reference. And then from standard precautions, the National Association of State and Public Health Veterinarians has information on zoonotic disease. This is not zoonotic, by the way. Let me make that clear. There's no information to indicate this is either zoonotic or reverse zoonotic, but it does talk about standard precautions. And we're also talking about making sure we're not spreading it between pets by accident. So really good cleaning, really good disinfection. They're recommending hydrogen, the accelerated hydrogen peroxide products specifically for this, because they work quickly and do a really good job of disinfecting.
Excellent. Well, this has been great information that we wanted to get out to our colleagues out there quickly too. So thank you so much, Dr. Celine St. Bernard, for joining us, for being here, all the great work you do.
No worries. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. And to the listeners, if you want to learn more about the American College of Veterinary Preventive Medicine, you can definitely check them out on the website. We'll put it in the show notes too, but it's at acvpm.org. I think it's a fantastic college and it's a great resource that's out there as well. So thank you to the college for all the great work that they do for our profession. And to our readers and learners out there, we're going to continue to stay on top of this and we'll share any new information that we have. So be sure that you follow us on DVM360's Instagram, as well as on the website, dvm360.com. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And we'll see you next week right here on the Vet Blast Podcast. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast Podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.